What's up, Beardos? You're listening to an excitingly exotic bonus episode of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to don't be a jerk.
Don't
answer the question first. Not answering the question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talk about beards.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time for some very weird reason, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com, and you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com or just leave a comment below.
In today's bonus episode, we're going to review and discuss the first two episodes of the new Netflix original series, Tiger King.
Paul, I cannot wait to discuss these episodes with you.
Andy, you know, it's like I've been watching a lot of true crime stuff with my partner, and it's something that doesn't usually like excite me that much, or I'm like, this is fine, this is whatever. But this series is bananas, and I was not expecting to be so drawn into this.
Yeah, we've gotten several requests to review this show or to talk about it in some form on the podcast. And everybody that sent it to me was like, strap in, because this is a wild ride. And I will say that I've read an article about aspects of this whole scenario, this whole situation, this saga, and it did not prepare me for what I've already seen thus far in the first two episodes, which didn't even touch what I actually know about the story yet.
Yeah, seriously. Andy, every single person that is involved, that is like interviewed or being filmed, every single person is like a human cartoon character.
Seriously. All right, before we dive into this, Paul, first off, of course, this is a bonus episode. We want to send a huge thank you to all of the Beardos that are helping to sustain the podcast and fund all of the things we need to fund to keep it going, help us do the transcripts, make the donations, all of that great stuff. So whether you've been with us since the beginning or this is your first month helping us out, thank you. Thank you, everybody. Like, I know a lot of people have jumped on board or increased their pledges recently. And I don't know. It's just really awesome to know how much support that we have from all of you wonderful listeners, because this podcast, for me at least, is one of the few like really steady beacons in my life right now that currently cannot be affected by the coronavirus.
Yeah, you know, Andy, I think I had a few like routine things, consistency things that kept me going. And now, yep, this is one of the few. So I'm glad that we're still doing this.
Yes, absolutely. So, all right, dear Beardos, dear listeners, we are going to be talking about the first two episodes of Tiger King, which is a new series that just dropped on Netflix very recently and is taking the internet by storm. I think last time I checked, now that Netflix is actually showing you what like their top 10 shows or movies are, I think it was like number 3, which is obviously quite huge for this. I've seen so many people talking about it, and we due to time constraints, we have not watched the whole thing yet, but we also thought it would be fun to kind of take in the first two episodes and make some musings about the themes it's laying down, where we think it might be headed, and our hopes for the messaging of the whole thing. So we will, I guess we can give some basic thoughts. Paul, this series is it's very character driven, but it's super plot heavy with like twists and turns. And I know that we have not even begun to hit some of the major ones. So we'll give our basic thoughts on these first two episodes, whether we think it's worth it for you to check them out. And then we'll really dive in and do sort of like the nitty gritty of the whole thing. Does that sound like a good plan?
That sounds good, Andy.
So normally at this point, we would play a clip of the trailer and then read the IMDb intro. But even or like the IMDb plot synopsis, but even the IMDb plot synopsis, I feel like kind of gives away some stuff that we haven't gotten to, other than alluding to it briefly in the opening credit sequence.
I think it alludes to it enough that I don't know if this would still be considered a spoiler.
Okay. All right. Well, so if you want to know nothing about this series going in, listen no further. But if you don't mind some kind of light spoilers as to, you know, telegraphing where this thing is headed. And again, I've heard the friend who sent me this and was like the most like, you really need to check this out, was like, every time I think I know where it's landed for the big like reveal of the series, something else happens 10 minutes later. So I'm waiting for this bombshell to get dropped. But all right. So, Paul, let's get into it then with our review of the first two episodes of Tiger King.
It's not every day that a zookeeper went to prison for murder for hire.
There are more captive tigers in the U.S. than there are in the wild throughout the world.
You know, people are nuts, man. They're all crazy. I'm sure y'all got a story to tell.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Joe Exotic, and this is Sarge.
He was like a mythical character living out in the middle of bumfuck Oklahoma who owned 1,200 tigers and lions and bears and shit.
Come here, love me.
Outspoken, good looking, love to party and have fun.
I don't think we're done blowing shit up today.
I don't figure you are.
They have a heart and a soul and a mind. I've learned from them.
But Carol Baskin keeps saying, I can't have these tigers.
If he ever had an enemy in his life, it was Carol Baskin.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens, it's Carol at Big Cat Rescue.
Carol is the Mother Teresa of cats.
We will end the private possession of these cats.
This is my way of living, and nobody's going to tell me any otherwise.
The IMDb plot synopsis is: a rivalry between big cat eccentrics takes a dark turn when Joe Exotic, a controversial animal park boss, is caught in a murder for hire plot. So, Paul, this series is it is about the world of like big cat captivity, but it is very much, I would say even more so, about the world of the big personalities behind all of these various parks. So yes. Was this like a world you were familiar with at all before seeing this film?
No, definitely not at all. It's the type of thing where it's like, I knew these things existed, but I did not know that they were, I don't know if this is the typical like characters that they're run by, but I did not know that the like, what went into it or anything like that, or the people behind it. So it was just one of those things where it's like, yeah, I know that this thing exists and it sucks. Like the exotic pet trade and that, those sorts of things, exotic zoos and like petting zoos and stuff. But yeah, no, I really knew nothing about this. Did you?
So I have actually visited Big Cat Rescue before.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I was visiting a friend down there who is vegan and she really wanted to go, and it's in or near Tampa, and that's where I was visiting. So we went, and yeah, I would say that typically places that have these types of animals, by default, it's not the type of place I'm going to go. Like, I will visit a farmed animal sanctuary because they're taking in animals, they're rescuing them from horrific situations of abuse. And like typically when you see like a tiger in captivity, you're kind of assuming that that is the situation of abuse. So I feel like in general, I'm like, well, I'm never really going to see a tiger unless it's like at a zoo or something like that. And obviously I'm not going to go to a zoo as a vegan. So this seemed like a rare opportunity to actually go and like witness these wonderful creatures up close in person, or sort of up close, I guess. And I just kind of took the word of my friend for it, and I didn't really like do too much research. And like after the fact, I did come across some like conflicting opinions about the park, which I think the documentary is starting to allude to, which I think is one of the most interesting things about it. But so I guess I had my opinions about this park, which was that it kind of felt not quite like a petting zoo, but I've been to a few sanctuaries, farmed animal sanctuaries, where it felt like they were more closer to a petting zoo than something that's really designed with the animal's best interest in mind. And that was like kind of the vibe I got from Big Cat Rescue. But again, I know nothing about actually, you know, keeping and caring for these creatures and what size enclosures they need and all of that stuff. So I guess mostly I just feel ignorant to the whole subject. So it was interesting to dive into this world.
Well, actually, Andy, you know what? That just sparked a memory. We had a whole episode. I don't remember if it was a bonus episode or not, about when I visited a wild, like a big animal, exotic animal, I guess, sanctuary that was in Colorado.
That's where they had the lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my.
That's true. And it certainly, and I remember us having that discussion and me even at that point being like, yeah, like, I don't know if I would go back to something like this. And there were things about it that I didn't like. I remember, you know, they serve a lot of non-vegan food there. But it certainly had a very different vibe to it than what the Big Cat Rescue has. Like there was, it seemed like the one that I went to was much less. Like you kind of walked on this really high platform that was like 20, 30 feet above all of the enclosures. So you were never like interacting with the, and that was kind of their thing, is they're like, we don't want you to interact with these animals. You can like observe them, but we don't want interaction. So even that I remember we had some criticisms of, but this is like, definitely seems there was a lot more interaction going on with this one. And I don't know. Am I getting too specific of an aspect of this?
Perhaps. I mean, we're basically just sort of letting everyone know where we're coming from and where our experience with this world is. For me, aside from that one visit to Big Cat Rescue, and Big Cat Rescue and Carol Baskin, the founder, are central players in this whole saga that is slowly unfolding in front of us. And otherwise, all the others I would just classify in my head. I'd be like, well, those are like a roadside zoo attraction or some kind of like animal in captivity. They don't have the best interest of the animals in mind, so I am steering clear of them. So it was really interesting to get a peek behind the curtain of who is running these operations.
For sure. And you know, before we go any further, I think what a lot of people probably that haven't watched it yet want to know is it, you know, is this graphic? Is this hard to watch in terms of animal like exploitation and those sorts of things? So what did you think about that?
So I think that oftentimes the quote unquote graphic nature of something like animals in captivity is different than the graphic nature of animals that are being exploited for food. And, you know, like it's obviously, if you're going to see footage from some kind of like animal agriculture operation, you're used to seeing horrible conditions, but also used to seeing blood and guts. And I think that type of thing, that sort of visceral violence and death, is what a lot of people classify as graphic. But I certainly think it's no less disturbing or maybe slightly less disturbing just to see, like, you know, the undercover footage of like an elephant getting beat with a bull hook or something. And I've seen footage of tigers being trained where they're being like hit in the face. And there's just something so sad about that, to see these kind of really powerful, majestic creatures being reduced to these like party tricks that are being abused. And so far we haven't really seen any of that, I would say. Like there hasn't been anything where I've been like, ooh, the violence against these animals is really bad right now. With that being said, they do eat lots of other animals. So there is a lot of like dead animal carcass footage, or at least there's some dead animal carcass footage that's thrown around pretty casually at this point. And to me, that was kind of like the hardest thing to watch. And there's a couple of other moments I was like, this is kind of disturbing, involving like tiger cubs. But not because I was like, oh, this is so graphic and hard to watch, just because it's so clear that these young creatures are being exploited. So there's nothing that's caused me to say, this is really hard to watch from a graphic nature. How about you? How do you feel? How would you caution people moving forward?
Yeah, no, I think I would say probably about the same things. Like my partner does not want to watch it because she knows like exactly what you were saying, like the sadness of it, not graphically, but the sadness of it, like just that it's these animals that are in captivity and being exploited, is she thinks that would be too much for her. So if you're someone that like that sort of thing would be too much for you, then I would probably avoid it. But yeah, there's besides the lots of cow carcasses, besides that, like there hasn't been too much else that's been graphic. Although it's interesting that they show a lot of those cow carcasses, but then there is one part that has like human violence that is blurred out.
What was that?
When the person gets their arm ripped off.
Yes. Yeah. Spoiler alert. So with that out of the way, Paul, let's just hit those general thoughts real quick. How are you feeling about this series so far? Is what you're seeing interesting? Does it ask interesting questions? Is it just compelling or entertaining? And does it make you want to continue further to see the remaining six episodes?
Oh, hell yes. I definitely want to continue further. I will say that the thing that I find that when I'm watching a documentary like this that I look out for the most is like, how is the filmmaker like leading me into the belief that they like leading me into the conclusion that they want me to conclude? And at this point, I don't know what that conclusion is, because like, and I think this is to their credit, a lot of these different characters who have, some of them have very opposing views. A lot of them, they just give a platform and they just say, yeah, you like, I'm sure the documentary maker probably asked them like, what do you think about this thing? And then they said that thing and like, that's what's on film. And so you get in that regard, I really liked, I guess, how it was unbiased. And in that sense, it kind of lets you form your own opinions about some of these people and whether they're, you know, like good guys or bad guys, because a lot of the movie is two groups of people pointing at each other saying, oh no, I'm not the bad guy, you're the bad guy. And I think at the very beginning, you think there's a clear, you know, good guy, bad guy situation. But then as it kind of goes on, you're like, oh no, wait, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe like there is no good guy ? So, and I will say, even though I use the word unbiased, like I'm glad that they kind of let everyone talk and say their thing, they do still use film, you know, they use editing techniques to make you think certain things. Like someone will make some accusation about someone else, and then they'll show some certain footage that seems to like make that statement true. Specifically what I'm talking about is when Joe Exotic will make a claim that Carol, her like cages are very small, then they'll show a picture of a lion like in a smaller cage. You don't know if like that lion was just being transported between cages or anything like that. Like, you don't know if that was just tricky editing to make you think, or if in fact the lion is in this kind of small enclosure, or the tiger rather. But so there is some of that where like the editing kind of makes valid the statements that people are making. But besides that, I did really enjoy that they just kind of lay everything out. And at this point, I don't know where this is going. I don't know what's going to happen, because I know what the end result is. And I'm like, there's still six episodes in between that. And a lot of stuff happens in every episode. A lot of stuff is revealed.
Yeah. Yeah. Paul, I think to sort of reemphasize something that you said, in terms of how the creators or filmmakers or documentarians meter out information to the viewers, it feels very masterful. Like, I feel like I'm in the hands of people who are really assured of the tale they're trying to tell. And it's just, you feel like you're just unraveling a very tightly wound like mystery as you're watching it, even though currently, up to this point, there isn't really much of a mystery. Like, I feel like they're still really just kind of exploring who are these major players. Joe Exotic, Doc, Carol are kind of like the big three, although they've introduced a few other smaller people and all their employees, of course, or volunteers. But yeah, the film starts out and you're like, oh, this is going to be a documentary about this kind of weird, quirky, eccentric Joe Exotic guy. And yeah, he's kind of weird, but I don't know. He seems to love tigers a lot, and he's just like a misfit making a home for all the misfits in the world. And then you're like, okay, maybe there's more to that. And it keeps doing that with all of these characters, and it keeps alluding to certain things that I'm sure they're going to explore much further on in terms of who you think is probably the good guy in all of this situation. But just purely talking about this from sort of a filmmaking perspective, I feel totally drawn into this world. I just want to watch the next episode and see what happens. If I had a critique, I would say my biggest critique is that it's not, I don't think yet really an exploration of the ethics of animal captivity. It touches upon it, but really it's almost more exploration of, well, who do you really believe? And who are these people? Because all of them are very charismatic people, and charismatic people who lead large groups of people or isolated groups of people, there's often a lot more under the surface that's perhaps a bit darker than like the initial public would see. And so it's really almost more an exploration of like sort of like almost like cult leader mentality or like sociopath mentality. Not to diagnose any of them, of course, but just sort of the thing that you're used to seeing with charismatic people that are really good at manipulating people and their followers and getting people to do whatever they want, often for nefarious means. So, or usually, I guess, for nefarious means. So that is all entirely fascinating, but it's to me so far, it doesn't really feel like an animal rights documentary, even though there are tons of little threads that I'm sure we're about to pick up in the nitty-gritty like the nitpick discussion in a few minutes, where we could easily say this one line, what do you think this means, what are the implications, what is it trying to explore here. But just as an overall piece of filmmaking, it feels incredibly compelling, very interesting, and it's exploring a world that I am so unfamiliar with, and all of these characters that I am either vaguely familiar with or had never even heard of before, but I just want to know more about the situation.
I'll also say this. I think that the filmmakers like extraordinarily lucked out by the fact that they just happened upon this guy 5 years before this like ridiculous thing. Well, I shouldn't say ridiculous. I think that's downplaying. But before this,
it's real like wacky, Paul.
Before he hired someone to, you know, kill someone else, 5 years they've been following this. So it's like, I feel like with a lot of true crime documentaries, not that I've seen a tremendous amount, you know, it's like you get people who are like, okay, this event happened, let's go back, let's kind of salvage these home clips, let's salvage these videos that we have and try to put together this narrative. This documentary just has footage at every step of the way, and that's like, that makes it really, really good. So you have like, yeah, you have footage throughout the entire journey, like good footage.
Yeah. At first I was like, how the hell did they get this footage? And then, you know, then they reveal 5 years earlier, like whatever. But it is really kind of unprecedented. And there is another moment, I think in episode 2, where they talk about this animal hoarder guy who has like a compound that has guarded, you know, gates and guards and all this stuff, and they try to go there and get turned away. And then I think it was Joe Exotic, right, who's like, oh, I supply that guy, I'll give you his phone number.
No, it was like a different, it was like a different, just, you know, Exotic Zoo guy, just okay. some other random character that they haven't really gone into.
Gotcha. And so they're just like, oh yeah, I'll give a call. And then the next thing you know, they're like in this guy's private facility and he's given them all sorts of information. So the filmmakers definitely have some footage that I don't think you would ever get if you, one, tried to make this documentary starting right now at this point in the whole story. And certainly some that they wouldn't get unless they had some interesting connections and people that were willing to vouch for them. But it speaks to how right everybody thinks they are, that they're so willing to talk so freely about their operations and their viewpoints on camera, because clearly they think, if I just tell people the truth, or if I tell people my version of the truth or my story, clearly people will believe me, perhaps because they're so used to being able to like charmingly manipulate people to get their point of view across, that maybe they don't realize that certain viewers and filmmakers might see through that.
Well, I think, Andy, no one exudes that more than Doc Antle, which I feel I love what the filmmakers do. Like from the bat, from the get go, they kind of frame him as this, like, you're like, okay, this guy's kind of like a joke. And over time, over the first 2 episodes, you're like, okay, this guy's like a skeez ball. But right from the beginning, when he's telling the directors, he's like, oh yeah, you can come in through my front door, and then I'll pretend like I'm opening the door and greeting you. And then the directors are like, oh, I'm glad, like to themselves, they're like, oh, I'm glad he's telling us how to direct our own film. And then they do that shot. And the fact that they leave in all these little quips of him telling them how to like direct the film is so, it's like so funny. And it really, like gives you an idea about who he truly is, because that's not what he's going to display when he's actually in his interview, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. He is someone that's used to being in control of his environment and really directing things and, you know, really laying out how things are going to be. So yeah, it is fascinating. So I guess, Paul, with that said, if what we've been talking about is something that interests you, clearly we would recommend that you watch this documentary. Is that safe to say?
Yes, definitely.
And with that said, let's get all deep into this two episodes of Tiger King that we've watched, with spoilers starting right now.
Hey, come on. I haven't seen it yet. It doesn't have anything to do with the plot. Still, I like to go in fresh.
Paul, where the hell do we even start with this thing?
Well, Andy, so I think when you first, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, you kind of already had an experience with Big Cat Rescue, so maybe you already had like a kind of biased opinion going into it. I had a fresh view going into it, and I was like, oh, okay, Carol is going to be the good person in this story, the one that's trying to rescue the cats, and then everyone else is the people that are trying to exploit the cats. But then like over time, I feel like over the two episodes, the way that the film is constructed is making me question that. Like, it's making me question if she... Well, here's the thing, Andy, is save maybe a couple characters. I feel like people like Joe Exotic, I do think that they truly believe that they, like, are bonded with these animals, that they care about and love these animals. And, of course, I think that Carol is the same way. But as we know, like, that doesn't mean that they're not also ruthlessly exploiting them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when the one person that works for Joe gets their arm ripped off, one of the first things he says is, I'm never going to financially recover from this.
Yeah.
So it's like, these are people that, you know, yes, they, I'm sure that they do care about their employees, and he's like, you know, offering employment to people who are kind of down on their luck and stuff like that. So it's like, I'm sure that they do care about these things, but the film's kind of making it seem like everyone is just also just exploiting the hell out of the animals and the people.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. As I'm thinking, are these filmmakers just sort of masterfully making the case, like, on a low-key way so far, that all captivity is cruel on some level? I don't know. I don't even know. Paul, we haven't even read who directed this thing like we normally do. I have no idea what their leanings are, what their ethics are, what other projects they have done, which probably would have been good background to get before we start talking about this. But yeah, I mean, I think that as far as kind of some of the bigger themes that aren't necessarily directly tied to each individual personality, is just this idea of, like, what is the nature of exploitation? Who's exploiting who? Or is it okay if you just slap Big Cat, if you slap the word rescue or sanctuary after something, does then that make everything you do to keep that open and care for those animals ethically permissible? Like I said, I've certainly been to some sanctuaries that are highly regarded, you know, by many, many people, some of the most popular sanctuaries out there, at least in terms of like Facebook followers and all of that stuff. And I visited and I thought, this really just kind of feels like a petting zoo. And obviously this is a better situation for these animals than cut up on someone's dinner plate, but it still feels kind of wrong. And then I'm like, well, I don't know, who am I to say if this is what they have to do to get the public in, to get tickets, to feed these animals? Maybe it's not so bad of a trade-off. And so I think the film is, this documentary series is kind of asking you to ask those questions. It keeps like doing the thing where it's like, but Carol is just as bad, isn't she? From like Joe Exotic or someone will say something like that. And it's like, feels ominous for a second. And you're like, okay, now we're going to get into it. And you're like, no, I guess that's going to be an episode like further down the line. So, but I do think that as far as like bigger animal rights themes, to me, that's kind of the biggest one that is kind of being woven throughout this entire thing, which is like, is this person, Carol, someone that is just better at playing the game that Joe Exotic and Doc Antle are playing? You know, like, has she just learned to more effectively manipulate the public and manipulate people into not even getting paid to work there, even though the other guys are paying them like 100 or 150 bucks a week for 12 hour days. Like, I think that that is kind of an interesting question that it's asking, is like, where is the line between exploitation and salvation or preservation or sanctuary?
And also, like I was kind of alluding to before, also, like, where is the line between, I don't know, do these people actually care about these animals versus do they just care about making money? Because all of them say that they care about the animals. All of them say that they're, like, you know, bonded with the animals and those sorts of things. And I guess does intention make a difference? Because if the end, like, kind of diagnosis is that what Carol Baskin and what Joe Exotic are doing is really not that different from each other, does the intention that you know, Carol is kind of, her position is saving the tigers. And of course she is probably not, at the very least, she's probably not breeding them. So for the continued, like, exploitation of this cycle, or the exploitation cycle, like, at least she's not continuing that. Like, does that, you know, do those sorts of things matter as well?
Yeah. I mean, and that really does, the breeding aspect feels like it's kind of the biggest dividing line between them. And I mean, I guess we're potentially going to learn if, like, Doc and I guess maybe Joe are killing the young tiger cubs once they've reached the point where they're kind of dangerous and are, as they say in the documentary, they're just a bill at that point. They're no longer exploitable for their financial gain. But like, that almost does kind of feel like the biggest line between all of them, because the fact that they're breeding and intentionally using these young animals. And like Paul, the moment to me that I was kind of alluding to earlier when we were having the graphic discussion was when they were holding up that, like, 6 week old or like even younger tiger cub of some kind. And they just kind of, like, assembly line style, like, move the tiger from one person's face to the next and then take a picture of it. And this young tiger cub is just, like, asleep, like, barely has their eyes open. And to me, even though that wasn't graphic, that was, like, one of the more disturbing things, because to me it said this animal is an object to be used for profit, not a living, feeling, thinking, you know, creature that deserves to have their own bodily autonomy. And, like, I don't know if the average person is going to see that and feel as disturbed by it, like the average non-vegan, I guess, and be as disturbed by it as I was. But to me, that was actually, as far as the animal stuff goes, because obviously there's lots of human abuse here, that was one of the most disturbing parts of this whole documentary.
Well, that's the thing, Andy, is that I guess, and I've seen some people, kind of some vegans, you know, posting about worrying about watching the show because, like, people who haven't watched it, but, like, is it going to promote these sorts of things, or are they going to, you know, are people like Joe Exotic and Doc Antle, are they going to benefit, even if it's not directly, you know, benefiting from the fact that they're in the movie, like, benefiting from the advertisement that they're getting? Because you're right that, I mean, this is something that clearly, because at least Doc Antle, Joe Exotic, like, it's hard to get a feel about how much, like, business he's actually getting. It seems like he's getting some business, but, like, Doc Antle seems to be profiting heavily off of his business. And so it's like, clearly there's a market for this, and is someone going to watch this and be like, oh yeah, like, I, oh yeah, that's me in there, like, with the tiger cub. That's me in the spotlight. And, like, and is that potentially dangerous then for people to watch this, for, like, a wide audience to watch this movie, or sorry, this documentary?
I keep calling it a film and a movie, even though it's clearly a whole series, but where's the line, Paul? Where's the line anymore? Yeah. I mean, I do think that's a danger. I guess a lot of this conversation, the takeaway, will depend on, what is the ending like? What is the, you know, what other parts of the story do they tell? But I could see someone that's watching it right now go, maybe there isn't a big difference between the rescue and the zoo and whatever, I want to pet them baby tiger. So, you know, it's like, it's almost like when people say, you know, well, animals die in field grain and harvesting, and what's different? There's still blood in your hand, so I might as well go and eat this dead cow or something like that. Like, is this film going to sort of reduce all exploitation down into the same thing? Because the film doesn't really sort of come down hard against captivity at this point, at least. It's not like they've brought in experts. They're like, animals in captivity experience depression and early mortality, and like all, they haven't really done that yet. And maybe they're just expecting that viewers will glean that from the situation. But the average person that's like, I go to the zoo for entertainment / education, and this is just an extension of that. So I don't really see what the problem is.
Yeah, and you know, I hope. Nay, I pray that this does kind of have some sort of conclusive argument against animal exploitation, because the thing I guess that I worry about, having only watched two episodes and knowing that the driving what this narrative is leading to is this like murder for hire thing that is just a human-centric issue. So it's like, I think it would be easy for the documentary to not even like make viewers take some stand about animal exploitation, because the documentary could just shift to be more human-centric. Because certainly that's why it's so enticing, is because these people are characters, you know, they're like, that they're these huge personalities. That's why it's so enticing. It's not because of like, yes, it's about like the battle between these two people who have opposing views about like tigers in captivity and these tiger petting zoos and stuff and tiger rescues. But that kind of is secondary to the people themselves. So I guess I hope that because we're kind of talking as though, oh, they're definitely going to make some sort of stand for or against this. And I really hope that is the case, but maybe they won't, because maybe they can just say like, oh, by the way, look at all these other things that these people have going on that are these wild aspects of their lives, and let's focus on those. You know, like a lot of the second episode, which I'm glad that they went into this, but a lot of the second episode, which was literally called, I believe, Cult of Personality, is about the fact that you're like, oh, is this person actually running a cult? And like, oh, are these people exploiting their volunteers or their employees? Are they abusing them? Like, that's a lot of what it goes into, which again, I'm glad that it's going into that so that can be addressed. But like, hopefully they'll remain focused on the actual tigers themselves as well.
Yeah, I mean, so far, because the focus has purely been, not purely, but majority been on the characters running these places, like the animals have almost been reduced to like a prop in this whole story. Like they're not really exploring the rich inner emotional lives of the tigers and lions and whatnot. The occasional crocodile has reared their head in there once or twice. Yeah. And maybe that's... Currently, it doesn't really feel like that's the story these filmmakers are interested in telling, but it almost like you have to ask the question, what is okay for these animals to feel any kind of sense of allegiance with anyone, to say this person's bad, this person's good, or some shade of either of those things. Like, without assigning morality to the captivity of animals, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it's like, there is no morality to it, and it really just depends how these personalities treat each other and try and shut them down. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, you know, it also makes me wonder, Andy, you know, we did not look up the directors, what they've made before, the filmmakers, the series makers, anything that they've made before. But I don't know. Like, what was their motive? The very, very beginning, they were filming... someone that's selling exotic snakes, and then they just happen to be like, oh wow, this guy has a snow leopard, where did you get that from? And that's how this whole thing happened. So they were filming someone selling and exploiting snakes. They don't say why they were filming that or not, but it makes me wonder, like, what was their purpose for deciding to start making an entire documentary about Joe Exotic? Like, was it because, like, was it because they looked at what he was doing and said, wow, this person is exploiting the hell out of these animals and these people. I need to tell this story. Or was it like, wow, there's this drama between this guy, Joe Exotic, and this person, Carol Baskin, and I want to capture that. Or like, you know, this person, Joe Exotic, is a ticking time bomb and something is going to happen and we're going to keep filming him until it happens. Like, it's very possible that that's what they were doing, in which case I guess it wouldn't surprise me if nothing end up, there wasn't any sort of clear message about the animal exploitation.
Yeah, Paul, that's a really interesting point, was what exactly was that? I feel like they must have alluded to it, or at least said what the original purpose of seeing those snakes were, but yeah.
I don't know.
We really have no idea what their actual motivations were. All right, dear listener, we just paused to do a little bit of research, and one of the directors, Eric Good, is behind a lot of Nine Inch Nails films. But Paul, you uncovered something on the Wikipedia page.
Yes. According to Wikipedia, it says, so Eric Good has a film production company called Good Film Productions. And it says, Good Film Productions was created to bring awareness to environmental and animal welfare issues. Its first documentary series, The Tiger King, can be viewed on Netflix. So Andy, with that being said, now I would be surprised if the film does not take a hard stand on this issue.
Well, Paul, I certainly hope so. I guess we can really only see how this plays out over the next couple of episodes. I'll be really interested to see how the series makes a pivot from focusing on the people to focusing more on the animals, or maybe the filmmaker is just hoping that taking a more nuanced approach is what is going to get people to, you know, like, it's not going to feel like a film that's really preaching at people. And I mean, I do think the film probably like prides itself on understanding that, like, the, you know, the editing and all that, they understand and are probably proud of the fact that the audience thinks they're going down one rabbit hole and then there's a quick diversion that you're going down a different rabbit hole. So maybe this is kind of a foot in the door, like, sneaky way to say, you thought you were watching this documentary series about a bunch of really wacky characters, and instead it's actually about the morality of captivity. I don't think it's going to go that far, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's at least one episode that's maybe focusing more on the tigers or something, or at least through the interviews with Carol, to have her really explain why what, you know, the other people are doing is so horrendous.
And if Andy, and if they kind of continue on the path that it seems like they're maybe continuing on, which is like, all right, maybe Carol isn't such a great person, or maybe she thinks that she's a great person, but what she's actually doing is not the best, in the best interest, or is kind of exploiting. If they do continue to go down that path, I hope that they at least give some example of like, this is the right thing. And the movie, I hope that the documentary is like, this, see, like, look, viewers, like, this is the thing that is good. And it would give people something to hold on to, as opposed to, I feel like I've been critical maybe of other documentaries before that kind of, they'll say like, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. And then it leaves viewers to be like, okay, well, thanks for telling me all those things are bad, but what's the answer to this, you know? And so I hope it kind of does give some answer that is satisfying for viewers who might be like, okay, I was not against these things before, but now I'm kind of seeing them in this not so great light. But then again, like, the supposed solution, Big Cat Rescue, I'm also not kind of seeing this in a great light. So how should I feel? So I hope that there is something that they give for us to latch onto.
Yeah, I hope that the film doesn't try to play it too vague. And I will say, Paul, that like, some of our favorite films that we've reviewed have been the ones that do kind of dabble in that ethical middle ground, or explore like the murky ethics of certain things. Even if you're like pretty sure you know where the filmmaker falls on it, that they at least do the, you know, do the service and like the credit of actually kind of exploring it. And I think that this series so far is doing that. Like, it makes the viewer ask questions, I think. Like, in episode 2, when they're exploring the whole like cult-like aspect of it, and they say, well, this guy only pays everybody $100 a week. And I feel like if we were in a theater the theater would go, you know, because that's like horrible. And then you find out that the next guy is paying like 150 or this is like 138 and change like a week for these 12 hour days. And you're like, oh, he's also housing them, but he's housing them in horrible conditions. And you're like, that is horrible. And then it's like, Carol's not paying anybody. And you're like, I mean, wait, is that actually worse that no one's getting paid and that you have these people that are putting in literally years to get their yellow shirt or whatever and they're not being paid at all? And like Carol doesn't even know most of their names. And there's just like many things like that throughout this these two episodes where you're like, I guess I need to actually think about this. The film isn't spoon feeding me the answers. And I think that if you just had a documentary about any one of these people, it would probably come out. If you just sort of let them talk and explain what their version of the truth is, I think any one of them could convince any audience that the way they're doing it is the right thing. If they didn't contrast it with all these other people. And they had that one guy who was more of a minor player. He just had like the private, quote unquote, private collection.
You mean the drug lord kingpin, Andy?
I don't know if it was that guy. I thought it was a different guy, but maybe it was him where he says, what do you, it wasn't him, but he was the one that was like, if an animal is endangered, what do? You breed them, you make more of them. And to make that illegal, doesn't that seem like the opposite of what you should do? And I could easily see someone go, that guy has kind of got a point. Like, shouldn't we? Now, obviously, it's like leaving out the fact that they're not being like put into a natural habitat. They're being sold to other people that are collecting these animals, but and they're exploiting them for cash and all of that stuff. But like on a surface level, I think anyone could watch that that's uninformed about these issues and be like, well, that guy makes a lot of sense. Like, why don't we just breed a bunch of these animals if they're endangered?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right.
Paul, what did you make of so far the series exploration of what the appeal these animals have to others? Like there's that moment when Rick, who is kind of the guy behind like a lot of the TV show filming stuff for Joe Exotic, said there's something addicting about the feeling of power being around these animals. I thought that that was kind of an interesting exploration of like, what is it about these animals that draw people to them? And like, I guess like people like Joe Exotic and Doc in the first place, but also the people that sort of come into the fold and then are exploited by them. And then they're like used, like the animals are not too dissimilar, Paul, I should say, from how a lot of people in animal rights nonprofits are kind of cajoled or manipulated, whatever, into or lightly pressured into doing lots of extra work for little pay because it's for the animals. And you see, it's interesting to see on the other side of the fence that these people that are exploiting them are also doing the same thing. They're using these animals to convince people to work super long hours and to do all sorts of horrendous things.
Literally on the other side of the fence, I was going to say. But I think, Andy, I think that the, maybe the difference is... What's that?
That was the end of my sigh from that joke you just made.
I think maybe the difference is... I don't know. I'm not going to rule out that there are people in the animal rights movement who are, you know, in it for some sort of either notoriety or profit, certainly. But I think that sort of exploitation that you're referring to does end up being more for like the greater good rather than, I guess, these characters, these people. It seems like the thing that they are exploiting everyone's like work and resources for is their own profit.
Yeah.
You know, so it's I feel like it's a little different in that sense, but certainly they're both are dealing with exploitation, like labor exploitation.
Yeah. I mean, because like Carol says at one point that these other guys are using animals as a way of forcing people into these labor camps. And then later it's revealed that she's not paying anyone. Now, presumably she's probably not housing them, or maybe there's like a few people that are probably like permanently on location 24/7. But it feels like it's a little bit different. Like they're volunteers, they come in and out. But they did talk to that intern who was like, I'm doing 12 hour days to speed track my way to get that yellow shirt or whatever.
Andy, the film made it seem like there were hundreds of volunteers.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's interesting, Paul, because I have no personal experience with Carol, but there are like multiple people in this movement that Carol reminded me of, who are kind of, they've been in it for a while. What are you about to say?
Name them, Andy.
I would never. You know, they're people that have been in this for a long time. They have a very singular focus on one specific species or like class, I forget the exact term, of animal, you know, and
genus,
a genus, perhaps a kingdom, where they're so singularly focused. And the fact that Carol was like, I forget the exact wording, you know, I think it's really great for someone to only care about one thing or something like that. And I don't watch the news. I don't look at social media. I only care about anything if a big cat is mentioned. And these people sort of gain a following of others that also kind of have that mindset and really look up to them. Because you can see the people that are volunteering there have this adoration for Carol. Like, she's a hero. You see that everywhere in this movement. Everyone's calling everyone a hero left and right. But
well, Andy, I thought a very revealing moment for Carol's character, the real life Carol, for her kind of revealing her personality and her character, was that when she's kind of going through and, you know, it's just showing her on social media and like making, she said, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a week from Facebook, from Facebook revenue. And it's like, I'm wrestling, Andy, with the fact that it's like, oh, I know that this, like, a sanctuary or a rescue, like, they need money. Like, they need to make money somehow.
Especially to feed those dang tigers, Paul. Yeah. $3,000 to $10,000 like, a year, depending on how much you're willing to dumpster from Walmart.
Yeah. you know, it's like, I wish it's also tough because those sorts of scenes make you think like, oh, she's in it for the profit. Look how much money she's making. It doesn't really though go into how much money, like how much profit she's personally actually taking. Because yeah. I know, you know, these sorts of sanctuaries like are not typically money makers. They're like, I feel like most sanctuaries are constantly scrounging for donors so that they can stay open and feed all the animals. So I don't know. I wish that maybe they will go into this. Maybe they do have the, you know, the actual data of how much she's actually making. She's got to afford all those cat print clothes. So
I was just about to bring that up. Like the film does make a point to really show everybody, all these main figures, what their houses are like and what their possessions are like, which I think kind of puts the viewer in the position of judging their spending habits.
Yeah, I suppose.
Maybe not judging, but assessing their spending habits. Like, it lets you go, all right, well, how much of that money that came in is going to the tigers and how much is going to their, you know, their fun fund?
Fun fund. So I don't know. So maybe it's a little bit unfair of me to be judging Carol or someone else based on speculation, but I do believe that that's what the filmmaker wants me to do.
That's definitely the position that they are putting you in.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see what gets revealed about her character in the next episodes.
Yeah. Paul, I guess I do have a few quick thoughts or things to bring up about sort of the animal rights side of things. I think that kind of early on, Joe Exotic says that cub, like in defense of cub petting, which is bringing 20 people to encircle a small like a tiger cub and have the cub go around and look all adorable and get the pictures. He says cub petting is the best form of education. And like, that is a defense that so many people use for zoos. Like, this is how we learn about the animals. And, a wise man named Dumi Bay once said, like, how much do you think you could learn about a human from watching them in a prison cell? And it's like, yeah, you can learn what it's like for an animal to be in captivity, but you don't actually learn like what the animal is actually like. And I don't know. I wish that this show, this series did a better job of rebutting that point, even if in the form of an interview from somebody else.
Well, I think the point that Joe Exotic was trying to make was similar but slightly different. He was trying to say, I believe, that people are going to care more about the animals if they have a firsthand experience, so therefore they will care more about, you know, the destruction of the rainforest, which is their natural habitat. I think that's the point he was trying to make, which that's the only thing that was literally ever kind of said about that. So I don't know how much, you know, his facility is actually pushing that, because you go into the gift shop and they're selling his, you know, country DVDs and stuff like that. Like, they're not, it doesn't seem like they're really pushing conservation efforts besides him just kind of offhand mentioning that.
Yeah, I think he said, I wrote it down, you got their undivided attention for about 15 minutes, and for 15 minutes they're saying, we gotta save the rainforest, and you want to capitalize on that. Now, how is he capitalizing on that? Is he diverting funds to the Rainforest Action Network or whatever, or is he just like getting them to write a checkbook thinking he's going to do the work, which is a trap I think a lot of people fall into. Let me just pay this activist to do the thing. But yeah, you're right. They kind of give it pretty short shrift. But I think a lot of people would say, oh, that makes a lot of... Again, like so many of the things, someone watching it that hadn't thought about these issues or was uneducated on them could easily go, oh, that actually makes a lot of sense. Like, yeah, it's kind of exploitive. They get the picture, they're a prop, but really, how bad is it actually? And maybe that's the question they want you to be asking, is how do you actually feel about these things?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Andy, it certainly does not seem like Joe Exotic is profiting that much off of this business.
No.
From an outside perspective.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they resort to what they do just to feed the tigers, you know, it kind of shows... I mean, it could just speak to his thrifty nature, but it does feel like... I think it was Doc where they were saying that people were paying between like $300 and $600 for the visits to the park. And I can't imagine the GW Zoo where Joe Exotic is that much. I forget how much I paid when I went to Big Cat Rescue. I don't think it was more than $30. Like, whatever it was, I was like, this is a little more than I want to spend. But it wasn't obviously something that made me like leave or anything.
I think that Doc is the only character where you're like, okay, this guy is just a real asshole. Like, he's like the pure evil, the true evil of the,
yeah,
of the characters.
Especially because they point this out, he's way smarter than Joe, or at least he's, that's what the wording they used. I might say that he's a lot more cunning and able to hide his manipulation of people. But yeah, he does feel like he's kind of the big bad of the whole series, and that like Joe is kind of painted like a sort of lovable scoundrel type, almost, you know, little scamp.
I mean, Andy, there are like aspects of his personality that I think are admirable. Like, obviously I don't like at all the exploiting of any of the animals, like that aspect I completely disagree with, but the fact that he is willing to hire, it seems like he's willing to hire people down on their luck, and it goes around to like a few of the people, and they, and again, this could be like just him actually manipulating them, but it seems earnest, and it seems like it, some of those people really seem to love working there because it's like, that's what they have, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, if it feels like his place is the island of misfit toys, you know, like,
yeah,
they're kind of like the rejects of society. They're out of prison, all that. And so, you know, someone does say that it's a way of taking advantage. It's like, it's a way of getting people that have no other option, and yeah, they're free to leave, but they can't really leave. They don't have, they're not getting paid enough to save up anything. They don't have anywhere to go, et cetera, et cetera. But I do agree with you, Paul, that it does feel like there are more admirable traits of Joe than of Doc, because Doc is straight up like, oh, I'm grooming these young women since they're teenagers, and yeah, then like forcing them to have breast implants and like join my, you know, collection of sex partners, you know, like, yeah, like everything about it seems skeezy. The fact that he's like, I'm going to control what you eat, I'm going to control what you wear, I'm going to control what your body looks like. Like there's nothing about that that I think could be twisted in any way to feel altruistic at all. Whereas like the impression I get from Joe, even though I think what he's doing is reprehensible, like with the animal park and everything, is like, he's a fucking weird ass dude that has probably been like shit on by society, and he found his own little like corner of the world and where he can be with some other fucking weirdos, like, you know, and he has, you know, we all have our own little like messed up chosen family kind of thing, and his is just maybe a little more messed up. But obviously I think we're going to learn a lot more about him as we go on, you know, the whole murder plot they keep alluding to.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that the film straight up has people say, like, he is a ticking time bomb. Yeah. Like, it was kind of, it makes it seem like, okay, this person, it's only a matter of time before something, like, really bad happens with this person.
Yeah.
What else you got, Andy?
Well, I think that's kind of it. Oh, I was going to say, I did find it interesting when they were showing all like the downed cows and how they're like, yeah, these downed cows that they feed them often come from feedlots. Like they're sick and dying animals that, and the feedlot calls them, is like, hey, you can haul off these three cows if you want. Obviously the film did not go into it at all, but it was kind of interesting to think about how the exploitation of these exotic, you know, these tigers, and the exploitation of the cows and really like animals that are very common to the American public are kind of intertwined in that way. I'll be surprised if the film ever really comes back to that, but I think that was I appreciated seeing that connection there. I guess the other thing that I thought was real silly was when that park goer was like, you can't put a price on holding a baby tiger after having paid a price to hold a baby tiger.
And that price was what? $650.
Yeah, seriously. And like, I do, I mean, on that note, on like the animal selfie thing, I think it was Carol that was like, these selfies aren't about the animals. They're about me, me, me. Like, look at me. They're just props. And I did appreciate that she pointed that out.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it didn't go into too much of like what the interaction is with, at Big Cat Rescue. Like, I know, I think there was a shot of her saying to all the people that were there that day, like, oh, like, you know, we're not going to like touch or pet the animals because we don't believe in that. But I do wonder how much of it is also just going around, you know, taking pictures of these cool animals and, you know, taking a selfie with the animal from like outside of the cage type of thing.
Yeah. Well, Paul, I would say my biggest takeaway from these two episodes we've seen is that anybody involved in running a facility for these big cats loves magic and making bad music videos of their music.
Andy, the Big Cat Rescue music video, there's a shot where they keep showing the music video, and then it just shows the filmmaker, and he's just kind of like you could tell that he's just sitting there and it's just like, my God, like just expressionless, but no expression needed to be like, help me. Like, why is this happening?
I mean, God bless him, Paul, for all the footage that I'm sure they sifted through, like I can't, incountable hours of Joe Exotic's like public access show, internet show, whatever it is. Like, I'm sure they went through so much of that to find interesting things. And like when they got the clip of his younger husband, that was very telling the way they edited it, where they're like, how do you feel about this place? And he's like, oh, I think it's really great. But then he kind of looks a little dead inside and is like quiet for like 5 seconds, yeah, before they cut away. And you're like, oh God. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's interesting to note that the polyamory, or the polygamy, as this show puts it, of these two founders is also the same. Like, you know, it's weird the similarities between them, even though Joe Exotic keeps saying he's like my mentor. I like look up to him and how he runs things.
Yeah. Oh, Andy, this is a wild ride.
man. I listeners, do you enjoy this discussion? Do you want us to record another one once we've seen all 7 of these episodes? Let us know. We'll probably do it anyway.
I mean, we'll definitely watch it anyway, unless take some weird turn. Like I can't imagine not finishing this.
Yeah.
This whole series probably tomorrow or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Quarantine, baby.
I think that's all I got to say about it, Andy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that is it. Okay, Paul, what do you hope for the future of this show?
You know, Andy, I don't know, because literally episode 2 ends on the revelation that Carol possibly murdered her husband and fed him to lions, so, or tigers. So where this is going to go, no clue. But I'm excited at the prospect of where it could go. And again, like I said at the beginning, there's, you know, 6 or 7 episodes left before ultimately I imagine the last episode is going to be talking about like, oh, yeah. And then he tried to murder her or hire someone to murder her. So it's like, what's going to happen in between? What like revelations do they have? I have no clue.
Paul, my prediction is that the murder plot comes in by episode 4. I think that there's going to be so much more wild shit that happens between like after that. Or at least exploring the fallout of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
As far as what I would hope for the show, I was hoping that we'd get more about like all of their interactions with animal rights activists. At one point early on, Doc refers to the people who don't want us to have any relationship with animals at all. He doesn't say the activists or anything like that, but you know, I'd like to see that perspective explored in all of this, like even one that's further to the, I guess, extreme or whatever of Carol's, which is like these animals just shouldn't be in captivity at all. I would like to see that perspective represented in this film. I'm not super hopeful for it, but we got 5 more episodes to go, so who knows?
You weren't encouraged when PETA showed up for a hot minute?
Yep. Yep. Paul, I'm never encouraged when PETA shows up.
All right. Well, did you see this? Did you don't email in and spoil it. That's all I got to say. Email in, give us your thoughts, but no spoilers, please. Or if there are spoilers, you know, put it in the headline or something so we can wait till afterwards. But let us know what you thought. Send those emails in to thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. And like Andy said, let us know if you want us to film a review after we finished all of them. And I think it would be nice because we can look back and say, wow, we were right, or wow, we were completely wrong, or holy shit, I can't believe that happened, which is the most likely option.
I mean, Paul, honestly, by the time I edit this and put it up, I bet we'll both be finished with the series anyway. So
I imagine that is true.
Cool. Yeah. Looking forward to everyone's thoughts on this. I know this is a very popular show. A lot of people are asking for us to talk about it. So there you go. Paul, I thought the most interesting experience offered at Joe Exotic's place was for $750, one could hold up a young Paul Steller and hear him say the following 7 words.
We are the Bearded Vegan, signing off.
And yeah. This thing is just like this thing. This young creature is just canceled. Because hasn't really condemned necessarily. I have a very sneezing cat next to me. Quarantine. Well, I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. I guess we can only really see how that plays out. And shut up. Oh, what was I saying? Yeah, well, I certainly hope so. I mean, I guess we can only really see how this plays out over the next couple of episodes. God damn it. So this dog, Decker, he's a wonderful dog. He's deaf, and his favorite thing to do is bark. Like, he just stands there barking and wagging his tail. He's great. But you can't just be like, Decker, stab it. Got a cat puking next to me now.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't, Paul, I've been talking for so long, I have no idea where I was going with that point.